So it's a pleasure, and I don't even know how many times I can say it's been a pleasure before to welcome Dave Rico here to the store. It has been many times. I'm guessing at least 10, something along those lines. I'm looking at Jim, and he's got a blank look on his face, so he's not into math at the moment. But you can get a sense of, you know, I could probably figure out somewhat from this list of his books here, and this is not even complete. I have a few that I couldn't fit. They're still over in the front window there. So you get the sense that Dave has been a prolific author over the years, and he has spoken about many of these books, maybe a couple in the window there as well, over that time period. So his latest book, and you already know this, presumably, The Five Longings, What We've Always Wanted and Already Have, is getting some nice reviews, both from customers in the store and online. And it's a simple thing to welcome Dave Rico back to Many Rivers Books and Tea, and please join me in doing so.
Thank you, Rob, for inviting me, and thank you for coming. My book is called The Five Longings, What We Have Always Wanted and Already Have. I'll explain about that shortly. I thought I would begin with just a short reading from the introduction. And I start with a quote from Shakespeare. This was said by Cleopatra and Antony and Cleopatra. I have immortal longings in me. We all sometimes feel that there's something missing in our life. We long for whatever might make up for the lack, yet rarely with satisfactory results. How long have we longed for that which keeps evading our grasp? The fruit far out of reach, the ship that has vanished over the horizon, the lips that decline our kiss. The impossible to hold on to is precisely what arouses our deepest longings. What hoax makes us ache for what we are unable to obtain and not equipped to keep? What is it in us that makes us spread what Emily Dickinson calls our narrow hands to gather paradise? Why are there existential hungers in us that don't go away, even at banquets? These are the questions we carefully address in the pages that follow. So that's my overall topic. And the five specific longings, which are only five of the many that we have, are, of course, love. We had a longing for love all our life. A longing for a meaningful life. A longing for the freedom to be our true self, without inhibition and without compulsion. A longing for happiness. And since we're evolutionary beings, we have a longing for growth. So in the book, I take you through each of those. First, I distinguish between longing and desire, which I'll do shortly. Longing, desire, and addiction show how those are different. Then I have the five chapters on the topics I just mentioned. And then the last chapter is on the questions in life that don't go away. I took two specific ones. Is there a God? And why is there evil in the world? And I try to show that those aren't really questions. Those are longings. When you say, is there a God? It's a way of acknowledging that there's something in humans that wants to know that there's some protecting and accompanying force in the universe. So when we ask the question, is there a God? It's not really, is there such a thing as God existing? it's, am I alone in the world? And then with the question of evil, takes us into the topic that I try to explore on how we're called to forgive the unforgivable. Not just the forgivable. So there are wonderful questions to explore, and it was very empowering for me to write this book and be able to go into these topics. Now, as far as the five longings, each of them is shall we say, a container of many other longings. So the longing for love is also the longing for connection, the longing for belonging. So the terrible fires that have just happened, by taking away homes, they take away part of what gives you a sense of belonging. That's why it becomes even more traumatic than simply a fire. You see what I mean? And I'm aware that you all have been through a traumatic time, so I'm sorry that it all happens. And it doesn't go away easily, the pain of loss. It's as if we're all grieving about what happens, especially those of us who live in California. But we're not doing so as a whole community at times. So we just kind of grieve on our own. That gives you a sense of isolation. That's the opposite of the longing for love and belonging. So we keep that in mind. As far as the difference between longing and desire, it's fairly simple. If you go to the dictionary and you look up desire, this is what you find. It's a wanting of an object or goal that can be described and is fully attainable. For instance, a desire for a car can be fully described, and it is attainable if you have the money. Desire for a college degree. Desire for a relationship. Those are all examples of desire. Now compare that to the dictionary definition of a longing. A persistent yearning for what is ultimately unattainable, for example, a longing for the past. I wish sometimes that things were still like they were during the 60s, hippie times. I'm really yearning for myself at age 20. And it's unattainable. So a longing has three elements. You can't quite put it into words. For instance, you say, I have a longing for love. But you can't quite describe what this love will look like. But you do know it when it's happening. Secondly, a longing is enduring, unlike a desire. For instance, let's say I have a desire for a flashlight. I buy this flashlight. Here I am holding the flashlight. The desire for the flashlight has ended because now I have it. But when I have a desire for love, it doesn't end when I have it. Even while being loved, I still want to be loved the next day and every day after. Whereas that won't happen with a flashlight. and third and most powerful, a desire is fulfilled by the particular object. I wanted a Phillips screwdriver, and now I have one. And I don't want more. I don't want more of a screwdriver. The one I have completely fulfills the task. However, when it comes to a longing for love, I'm always longing for more love, a bigger love than I've ever had before. So those are the three qualities of a longing. And what I'm hoping is that while I'm talking, you might be thinking, or maybe later, make contact with the longings in you. It's clear what our desires are, but we don't often ask ourselves, what do I long for? We long for something that's bigger and bigger all the time, that endures for a lifetime. Even on the day I die, I will be longing for love. No matter how much I received, unlike the long line of desires that have either been fulfilled or not, they won't matter as much. And that more is why some mystics say that all longings are longings for God, because God is the more with a capital M. Now, it says here what we always wanted and already have. So we already have love in us. We already have meaning in the world. We already have freedom, etc. We're longing for the more and more evolved version of each of these. When it comes to desire, you can become addicted. For instance, you could become addicted to alcohol, drugs, gambling, sex. But a longing will never become addictive, because it's held in a different way. It doesn't lead to a craving. It just sits in us as an ongoing waiting for the one to come along who will bring us something of what we were looking for. For instance, the one who really loves us. The one who shows us a meaning in our life. The one who encourages us to be ourselves rather than be tied to conventions. The one whose presence makes us happy. The one who helps us grow. A partner that would be a true soulmate would be one who continually touches in on all five of these longings. Whereas in addiction, the more isn't more quality, the more is more and more of something. That's the difference between belonging and addiction. So let me just check in with you. Questions about this part? Because these are the overall definitions, shall we say, of the topic of the book. Any questions or ideas?
Yeah. It's just interesting how consumer culture is built partly on desire. It's, you know, there's all this stuff to fulfill desires, but it's playing on our longing, knowing that we're actually never really satisfied even with the screwdriver, because, you know, it's just a thing. It didn't fill that
void.
Never fulfillable thing. And we do kind of trick ourselves into thinking, someday if I just have a, whatever it is, although, you know, that we've all bought cars and thought that it would make us feel better, and it didn't. So it's like we've gotten kind of over that to a degree, but it's still like it's so like relentless, you know, the way it's propped up in the culture. It becomes confusing. We mix those, we kind of mash them up. It's neat to see them separated out and longing from desire.
That's a very good point. I've never thought of that.
The next iPhone.
They're trying to prey, P-R-E-Y, prey on our longings by saying, well, you'll fulfill them by getting more things. Isn't that what you mean?
Yeah.
There's always the newest model, like the new iPhone,
yes.
The newer iPad,
yes.
Particularly in tech things.
I was watching a movie last night and two women talking, and one woman was looking at the other woman's phone and she drops it on the ground. And she picked it up and she said, oh, I'm terribly sorry. And the other woman said, oh, that's okay. The new one comes out tomorrow. I'm sewing it together. New model. Yeah.
My understanding has been that cravings is a form of attachment.
Can you speak up?
Yeah, my understanding of cravings is more of an everlasting attachment that truly never satisfies the quench of that thirst. You take it, you drink it, it's like salt water. It will never quench your thirst. And it's more of a Buddhist view of an understanding of the ego of gluttony. That once you have it, you're done with it. You may crave it later, maybe a bit distinct, different, just like our egos.
Mm.
But it's ongoing, and it's an illusion of the mind. That you want it, and once you have it, it's not enough.
Yeah. It's a very good point. And, of course, the first noble truth of Buddhism is everything is ultimately unsatisfiable, mm-hmm. unsatisfactory. And the way we bring suffering on ourselves is by attaching
mm-hmm.
to our desires.
Yes.
Whereas there's nothing against any teachings to notice that we all have longings. This is what makes us humans. The animals don't have longings. They have desires, which are instinctively fulfilled. But we carry around these lifelong yearnings for feelings and experiences that we can't make happen. We need other humans to help us, although sometimes nature fulfills some of our longings. So that's another possibility. I'm thinking of this poem by Wallace Stevens, in which he says, perhaps the truth depends upon a walk around the lake. Like, instead of thinking. Yeah.
Okay, this is kind of a personal question that I may be a little embarrassed to spit out in public, but in terms of, I'm often trying to think of how I actually, or how to hold the longing I have for my ex, who when we're together, met those qualities that you listed, and had that, and now that she's gone. I don't know whether to regard this as an addiction or pointing to that bigger longing in the sense that you're describing longing, that it's not necessarily about her. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you for letting us be witnesses of that. Makes sense. Somebody else had a question? So, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do about the air conditioning. I've had several requests to turn it off.
It's unfortunately, we have no control over it, number one, and even if we did, the thermostat is completely inaccessible in the far corner behind all that stuff.
So
it will really turn off, I believe, eventually. We apologize.
Sorry. So I'll just say a little more about desire and longing. And this is from the book. A desire is time bound. We want something here and now, or we wanted it for a while. When we find what we want, our desire ends. But a longing has no shelf life. Right now, you may not want the dessert that you desired last night, but you do have all five longings from last year and all the years before. They are up and running right here and now, even though each of them has found some fulfillment over the years or even yesterday. In this sense, awareness of longings is an indicator of the fact that we are living in the present. So to me, the longings are also teachings, as in Buddhist teachings. And I try to show throughout the book how all of these longings have something to do with the Dharma, that is the teaching of Buddhism. Our very being is teaching us the Dharma, the enlightened way to spiritual consciousness. The psyche, with all its longings and desires, is Buddha alive today, here in us. In our longings, we glimpse Buddha nature, a realm of love, meaning, freedom, happiness, and growth. In our desires, Buddha is teaching us impermanence. In addition, when we long or desire with an openness to any outcome, a let it be attitude, we free ourselves from craving. We let go of the must-have energy that is the cause of suffering. Another Buddhist teaching. So let's take a look at the central longing, which is the longing for love. And the longing for love is the equivalent of looking for freedom from fear. Because love is the opposite of fear. Love frees us from fear because fear excludes and love includes. The interesting thing about the longing for love, which I've certainly noticed in my own experience, and I'd like to share this idea with you, and as you're hearing what I'm about to say, kind of let your mind go back to your childhood, because you might find something very interesting about yourself. Love is a signature experience. Just as every signature is different, but all the letters are legible, love is like that. Everybody can tell when someone is being loving. That's the equivalent of reading the signature. But every way of showing love and receiving it is written in your own hand in accord with how you were first loved. If you think back to the person in your life that you we're absolutely sure did love you unconditionally. That is, not based on whether you were a good boy or a good girl, but just because you were you. If you think of how that person loved you, in my case it's grandmother, ever after, when you find that kind of holding love, that's what will be real to you as love. You can't go by dictionary definition. That would be like trying to find your signature in a dictionary that's not in there. I saw this movie once, obviously a comedy because it was W.C. Fields and Mae West. Anyway, it was a Western. And in this particular town that they were in, there was a masked bandit going around doing criminal things. One night, Mae West was taking a walk. Kind of unbelievable. There she was, she's walking out on the plains by herself. And all of a sudden, the masked bandit rides up to her with his horse, gets off the horse, and kisses her. Gets back on the horse and rides away. Later in the film, a man, what seems like another man, kissed her. And after the kiss, she pulls back and she says, "A man's kiss is his signature. You're the bandit." She knew by the kiss. Get what I mean? And when I heard that word signature, that's where I first got the idea. I said, oh yes, love is like a signature. Each person will feel it in his own way. It's usually very simple. For instance, it could be somebody stands up for you. Somebody physically holds you in a non-invasive way. Somebody stays with you as you go through things. The Lord is my shepherd. So you have to ask yourself, what felt like love to me? And is that what I've been looking for all my life? That's your longing for love. Isn't that fascinating? And since you already received it, it's in you, but yet you still look for it. Again, the difference between longing and desire. You won't be looking for another flashlight once you have one, but you'll always be looking for love, meaning, growth, and so forth. Everybody follow what I mean? And over the years, my particular, I could easily share my particular form of love. My mother would leave me with my grandmother evenings, and we would just be together. Of course, she was an Italian immigrant. I knew she couldn't understand English that well, but we'd be listening to the radio together, or we'd be doing a puzzle together. She wasn't very good at that either because she couldn't see that well. But she stayed with me. And ever after, when someone is just willing to stay with me, I feel that oxytocin kind of high, and it just feels like love, even if they weren't intending it. So, over the years, I've noticed so many ways that I have of manipulating people to stay with me, so that I could get that feeling. That's an example of a lifelong longing. I suppose even on my deathbed, I will want my son beside me. Stay with me. Follow what I mean? Anybody have any reactions to this idea or anything you'd like to share? something very touching about us, isn't it? It's not like the things we desire. They're all the same for everybody. But this, all five of these, like meaning, what you consider the meaning of life is different from the person sitting next to you. Every one of these is unique. That's another description of a lung. Yeah.
I think from my own experience that also the love also shows up in a form later in life that you never did get, that you were longing for. You may not know what it looks like or what it even feels like.
Good.
Yeah. And I think those are those undescribable longings that sit there, and you don't know it till someone comes up and fills it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the other half of what I was going to bring up, that it's also what you missed and you always wanted.
Yeah.
Especially from parents, but they just weren't quite able to give it to you. So you're going around looking. There's a poem by Emily Dickinson, in which he describes this. And remember that if love was missing, that makes you a mourner, because you instinctively knew that you were supposed to be getting it. And so if it wasn't there, you would be grieving the fact that it's missing. So this is her poem, which shows exactly what you just brought up. A loss of something ever felt I, the first that I could recollect, bereft I was of what I knew not, too young that any should suspect. A mourner walked among the children. I, notwithstanding, went about as one bemoaning a dominion, herself the only prince cast out. Elder today, a session wiser, and fainter too, as wiseness is, I find myself still softly searching for my delinquent palaces. And a suspicion like a finger touches my forehead now and then, that I am looking oppositely for the sight of the kingdom of heaven. Kingdom of heaven is within. She's looking outside. So we go, Emily Dickinson, and we go out there looking for what was missing originally, and we don't get it, that what we always wanted is what we already have. So the challenge is to try to give this to yourself.
Three of us didn't hear the word after delinquent.
Palaces. The house where love would be shown. The riches of love would be given to you.
Going
the
off.
Fan's
going off.
Could you recite the poem?
Yeah, I couldn't quite get. It's hard to project. Can the people in the back here?
I was just wondering if you could recite the poem again for people.
Okay. Bereft means something missing. And the name of the poem is The Loss of Something. What next?
Fire engines.
A loss of something ever felt I, the first that I could recollect, bereft I was of what I knew not, too young that any should suspect. A mourner walked among the children. I, notwithstanding, went about as one bemoaning a dominion, herself the only prince cast out. Elder today, a session wiser and fainter too as wiseness is, I find myself still softly searching for my delinquent palaces, and a suspicion like a finger touches my forehead now and then, but I am looking oppositely for the sight of the kingdom of heaven. She has said it all. So ever after, she's out there with her longing, searching. That's what happens when, instead of holding the longing and letting things happen that give moments of fulfillment, instead you're out trying to find it, it will be a stressful experience. And at some point you get it, that what you're looking for, you have to begin within, and only after you make contact with the depths of yourself, which is what a longing is, it's the deepest part of us, only then do you feel free. Yeah.
It reminds me of a writing. Come seeking, go seeking. Seeking is self-fulfilling. Seeking truth is truth fulfilled. Seeking love is love fulfilled. Seeking God is God fulfilled. Come fulfilled, go fulfilled. Come seeking, go seeking.
Mm-hmm. Fits. Other ideas? So, regarding meaning, you can see that what you would call a meaningful life is not necessarily what someone else would. So obviously that's signature also. Freedom is totally signature because it's the freedom to be you. Not the model of you that either your parents had, or school had, or church had, or society had. I'm thinking of this very touching quote by Alice Miller from her book, The Drama of the Gifted Child. The love I tried to gain with such uphill effort from my parents was never meant for me at all, but for the me they wanted me to be. Did they love me, or did they love the me they wanted me to be? That's a very...
a common...
That's where the love and freedom go together. When someone really loves you, they would want the freest version of you, not their own version of you. The longing for happiness, obviously, is also the longing for peace and contentment. And the longing for growth is both psychological and spiritual. So we want to grow in such a way that we're not so easily triggered by things that happen. And we also want to grow in the sense that we follow more and more the teachings of our spiritual guides, be it religious or Buddhist or whatever source you turn to for resources. Okay. Other comments? So I want to just share one more thing before we start to wind up. And this is to just touch upon the other topic that I mentioned. There are many questions that have plagued humanity for centuries. Two stand out. Is there a God? Why is there evil? Each is a longing in disguise. When we ask, is there a God, what we really mean is there a reliable force to turn to? I always wanted there to be one. Under the philosophical question is a longing for a caring love that will come through for us. So it feels good to hear St. John say, God is love, instead of God is the punisher or the rescuer. When we ask, why is there evil, we might be saying, how can I trust humans? How can I find safety and security in the midst of so much aggression? Our longing is then for love and trust. Each of these questions reveals all five of the long-standing longings that are in us. They tell us about our life and our humanity. Each is, shall we say, a koan. And I have this quote from Carl Jung. The utterances of the heart, unlike those of the intellect, are always about wholeness. What the heart hears are the great things that span our whole life, the experiences which we do nothing to arrange, but which simply happen. So another part of working with our longings is trusting that just the things will happen that will help us grow, that will show us what love, meaning, freedom, and happiness are about. Not in a superstitious way, but just from a sense of trust in a larger force that seems to be at work. The way I describe it is something we know not what is always lovingly at work, we know not how, to make us more than we are now and to make the world more than it is yet. That's a quote from the book. So if you can't say something we know not what is always lovingly at work, you could change it and say, may there be something lovingly at work.
And I think that helps us as we age to not be afraid at the moment of death to reach for that.
Yes.
It will be okay.
It's a wonderful title to C.S. Lewis' autobiography, Surprised by Joy.
Yes.
And
that's a quote from Wordsworth.
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And I've been through an experience of being surprised by joy in the past year. I'm a widower, and I'm part of a senior community, and I love to go to the twice a month sing along for just fun. And I'm concluding one of the evenings, person next to me that I was singing with said, you have a beautiful voice. Can I sit next to you the next time we have a sing? And I said, sure, I'd love to. Well, as I was going out the door, I thought to myself, oh, that would be very nice. And so we spoke the next thing, and then I said, maybe we could have supper together, and because it was something very attractive. And I wasn't looking for anything.
Is this your wife?
Partner.
Oh, okay.
And
I think this might be the woman he's talking about.
Oh, you're the one. I get it.
I would imagine.
No, I was thinking of Mike Pence. He never has dinner with a woman unless the wife is there. Talk about freedom.
You were
concerned. I'm going to say, when you're 94, you said you don't expect to fall in love. So just
it could happen at any time.
Hey, well, that's what I was surprised, because I kept enjoying these group things, and then I asked her out to dinner, and then that meant in the dining room in the senior community. I asked her over a period of a month. I asked it, you know, 4, 5, 6 times, and I couldn't get a way of telling her, I'm really drawn to you, and I wasn't looking for love. I wasn't consciously looking for love, but boy, it was there, and I was feeling it. And
well, that's a very good example of a lifelong longing.
Lifelong.
Being open and finding you.
Yeah, good point.
And so one Saturday morning, she called me up and she said, I couldn't sleep last night. I was thinking about you all the time, kept waking up. And I thought, oh, thank goodness she broke through the wall.
In addition.
Yeah, she broke. And so I said, well, that's wonderful. Come on over and let's talk. And so we talked, and I had a green light.
Yeah. But we don't want to hear about any more of the details from here on.
But I was just surprised.
I get the point. You were surprised by joy.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, any final questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could speak a little bit about this, where the connection with self comes into this process about longing, about, you know, having the love, meaningful life, freedom, etc.
They're in us as potentials, just as we have the potential to sing, to dance, to draw, etc. And we don't always activate them. So some of the potentials that we were born with never even show themselves. We don't even believe that they're in there. But yet, these five are in every one of us. There's some way that you could make contact with them. Other people sometimes are the guides who show us what's in us. You know, the teacher who says, you know, you have special skill in math. You see it in a deeper way. Maybe this is something you should major in. Or the coach who says, you know, the way you do the pitching, it's really special. Let me have you talk to one of what do you call the person who goes and looks for...
Scouts.
Yeah, let me introduce you to one of the scouts. Sometimes we don't see it as well as others do. But anyway, I see them all as in us as potentials.
And don't some of us go through our lives and nobody recognizes that?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then what? So you just have to say, think to yourself.
I better find them on my own. Because nobody's coming along to point them out. That is a tragedy, isn't it?
Makes it harder.
Yeah.
Without outside assistance.
All right. Well, I'd like to just end with this one wonderful quote from that I have in the book here from Saint Teresa of Avila. She's a Spanish mystic in the Catholic tradition, and her book is called The Interior Castle. Interior Castle, where all the longings are fulfilled. But this is such a wonderful quote. I'd like to end with this. Lord, consider that we do not know ourselves, that we know not what we really want, that we go infinitely far astray from what we most deeply long for. All right. You won't be going astray when you read this. All right.
Thank you so much on behalf of Many Rivers. Thank you all for coming out tonight. Many of you know the drill here. Of course, we have lots of copies of this latest book as well as other titles of Dave's. We have a donation bowl over there. We encourage you to contribute to it because we share it with our speakers and then retain half to maintain this space for further such events. Most of you heard the list of upcoming stuff. We have some good stuff coming up this month. And thank you all for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll stay up here if you want me to sign the book.
A quick question.
Yeah.
I fear that may be a little bit inappropriate, or it's one of your other works. Regarding the when there becomes a cosmic. So
yeah.
I'm a little intrigued because I saw that, and like E.T., my neck stayed back and it stretched out and walked backwards. I'm like, what's this? The understanding to get deep with the feminine energy is an essential part of the male human being because of our masculine conglomerate attitudes of machismo, for example.
Yeah.
Could you describe in a few sentences what kind of the book touches about?
It's about the divine feminine archetype. Instead of thinking of God as just masculine, you think of God as...
I might just pick it up, but...
Divine both.
I
think
in Gnosis, that's very important. And have you ever read some of the... I'm pretty sure you've been probably exposed with some of the Gospels.
Oh, yes.
Like Mary, Thomas. Really,
yes.
Touch on the subject of, you know, the importance of the feminine energy. Sadly, I think they
have the book here. You could ask Ralph.
Oh, yeah, no, they do. Like I said, I kind of walked and started looking like E.T. because my neck stretched up and my body was like, oh, come back. What's that? Pleasure to meet you, David.
Nice meeting you.
Albert, by the way.
Albert.
Do you think God yearns to be liberated from the tight restriction? God, the
yeah.
divine energy, longs to be liberated from the tight
from
framework, from religion,
yes.
and just change,
absolutely.
Like us,
yes.
with us, within us.
Absolutely.
Okay,
great. Hi,
thank
what's
you so
your
much.
First name? Thank
oh.
you. Eloise? Oh, what do you want
my
me to
name's
put?
Ellen.
So you want me to put Ellen?
Mm-hmm.
In here?
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
Oh, okay.
I read some of your books when I was doing my master's degree.
Oh, really?
It's a pleasure to meet you. Yeah.
Well, nice meeting you.
At Naropa Island. Thank you so much. I really appreciate tonight.
I think you'll enjoy it. Thank you.
Nice to see you again.
Nice seeing you. How are you
good.
Doing?
Good. I met you
yes,
last
I remember you
last
from last
year.
Time.
Anyway, would you sign just a
second? Absolutely. I'll just put 2 John.
Yeah, or just your name, that's fine.
No, I can put 2 John.
You recite poetry so freely at each of your talks that I've been a part of.
Yeah. That one I recited tonight was very touching, wasn't it?
Yes.
And meaningful.
There's a group that is in this area called Rumi Caravan, and they do an evening performance, and there's 4 people, and they just get up and just quote poetry, whatever is inspired at the moment. Phenomenal. Thank you. I enjoy your books.
Thank you.
And being an adult in love has been moving.
That's my best one.
Yeah, I am in a men's group with Mankind Project.
It'd be great to read that as part of the men's group. Chapter a week or something.
I've been recommending it. So, well, safe journey. Thank you for coming here.
My pleasure. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
And good luck in your own way.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for your reflection.
Thank you.
I think somehow my meditation practice has kept me from being, from suffering the loneliness not having a partner.
Now I
wasn't looking for a partner, and she wasn't looking for a partner.
So it was just synchronicity.
Huh?
Synchronicity.
Yes. Yeah. So it was just a surprise is something I don't understand and probably will never understand. It just boom.
Surprised by joy.
Can you sign it for James and Linda? Whatever you do with it, but it's for us, you know. That was really fascinating.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked it.
Thank you.
Different people touch us in different ways. Yeah. So, anything for
Western.
You write us that.
Thank you. I was going to do that. And nor did that reward.
Might have a fight here about getting my books.
What is the name?
Well, my name's Susan, but I want you to do it to Bev.
Thank you.
B-E-V? Bev Blaisdell. She's a big fan of yours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She told me to come.
Great.
So I'm going to read it first, and I'm going to give it to her.
Okay. Oh, I think you'll really like it.
I think she will too. And if there was more time, I'd tell you what it feels like to have someone stalk me for a year and insist that it's because the person loves me and I love that person. It is so strong.
You didn't speak much on and already have. Then you have.
That's the mysterious part. But you would see it here. That works. Who is this person?
Good to see you.
So, do you come about this from philosophy or from sitting around and thinking?
Probably a combination of philosophy and Buddhist teaching and spirituality in general. Yeah. You'll see a variety of traditions when you read.
Yes.
And your first name is Albert.
Albert, yes. Thank you. Usually go by that name then. Jesus. Dr. Rico, a pleasure. Thank you for coming by and giving us a little bit of our wisdom, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you.
Blessings.
See you soon.
Namaste.
No.
She was very
David, do you live? I'm sorry, I missed the beginning. Do you live near here? Or?
San Francisco.
Not too far away.
But I'll be back in the spring to talk about another topic.
Well, you're quite prolific, that's for sure.
Thank you.
When did you start writing?
When I was, let's see, it's been about 25 years.
And it will be coming, the online hopefully. And the printing.
I don't know the
plan. Yeah, we'll have it. I'll have it the next day. Actually, I've been working on it tomorrow.
Yeah,
Sierra has had autoimmune news for about 10 years, so I've read dozens of books. Yes, she's now a veterinarian, so she speaks medicine really well, so we have in-depth conversations about it.
Okay, these are the six that are signed.
Okay, great.
So I'll leave them on this table.
Very nice talk. Thank you so much.
Oh, glad you liked it.
I hope it was all right. Asking you
to. Did we shut that off?
No. Just a moment.